Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, a beautiful afternoon for a good game of football now, and it looks as though we have the makings of it.
Barnes has come in. Oh, a fine goal by John Barnes. That's a beauty.
Absolutely emphatic.
And Jay De Merritt. Oh, yes. Luther Blissett. That's a spectacular goal.
And Helgeson comes in first. Oh, it's a goal.
And a goal. Sensational. And it's there by Jenkins. Delay. Joel Petrol again. You believe it!
Hello and welcome to the Watford Buzz podcast. Jordan, Matt and Tom all reflecting on Saturday's 1-1 draw at Bristol City, which means it's now three defeats in 19 for Watford. Guys, how have you been since we last spoke?
Good, it's good to be back. I think it's been a couple in a row that I've not been here for now. So, pleased to be sat here talking again about Watford. A shame we're not discussing a victory though, but... good to be here.
Yes, all good. Thank you very much. Good to be back. And nice to be talking about something positive away from home again.
Yeah. Jordan, you've missed a couple of good ones. You missed a Jake Livermore double goal game. I'm not sure if you'll ever get one of those again.
No, I shouldn't have come back, should I? I think I've jinxed it, I'm afraid.
Well, that's okay. We have got something just as rare to talk about this season anyway. A penalty for Watford. Our first penalty in 371 days. But who's really counting? Tom Delibashiru taking it as well, by the way. You had that one written down as I don't know, anyone suspected that would be the penalty taker, but very well taken. And an away point is always considered reasonable, isn't it?
Yeah, I think considering how they kind of dismantled us at Vicarage Road, it was a tough one. It was a game that I think there's quite a lot of apprehension around, especially if you watch that first fixture. But we did okay. It was up and down. It was mixed. It wasn't as consistent throughout the 90 minutes as we'd like, but we've got things to improve on, of course, but it wasn't terrible.
Mm. Tom, what did you make of that penalty? Was it firstly rightfully given?
Yeah, definitely a pen. He's got his arm up there. I know they were sort of fairly unhappy with it at the time, Bristol City, but I don't think they could really have any complaints about it. He had his arm in a very unnatural position. So, no complaints on that front. Very surprised it was Tom Delibashiru that got it. Obviously, the penalty gets awarded and you think, oh, crikey, yeah, it has been a long time since we've had a pen. Who's going to take it? Thought it might be Rajovic.
Did you reckon? I wasn't sure if... I couldn't really see Rajovic taking it.
I don't know
unless
why.
We somehow did the failed Thierry Henry, Robert Pires way to make
him
happen.
Can you imagine? I thought it'd either be him or Asprea or Martins, maybe one of those three. I definitely didn't have Tom Delibashiru down. I'd probably have Jake Livermore over him.
There was a moment where Wesley Hoot kind of pointed towards a spot and the camera kind of zoomed in on the feed I was watching. I thought, is Hoot pointing to say he's taking it? Which I thought was an even more interesting choice. But no real complaints on the execution from Tom Delibashiru there. That was pretty, he looked pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. He did very well indeed. Trying to take a leaf out of Troy Deeney's book, perhaps. At least from the penalty-taking point of view, nothing else.
Yeah, please don't take any leaves out of Troy Deeney's book.
A few good performances despite the draw. Georgi Chakvetadze's best performance, according to some. Do you agree with that one, Tom?
Yeah, he was very good. He's been good for a little while now, and I think he's one of those players that's ended up being a bit of a standing agenda item for us. The interesting thing is that those performances have been split between the kind of left wing role and the central midfield role. And I think he's proving himself to be a really useful piece to the team in that respect, that he can fill in on either. I just said that I thought the penalty would be taken by Matthias Martins, forgetting that he wasn't playing at that stage and it was Chakvetadze. So ignore that. Espria or Chakvetadze, Espria and Chakvetadze were the two kind of flanking Rajovic, weren't they? I think what is impressive for me, or what catches the eye for me with Chakvetadze, is he always seems to mix the kind of silk and steel of real hard work and endeavour out of possession. And then when he gets on the ball, he's got that bit of quality, and, you know, nearly arguably should have had an assist for Espria when he demonstrated both those things in the first half. He nicked the ball off Tanner, who was the right-sided centre-half, and then nice sort of ball poked across the face of goal for Espria, who probably tries to do too much and gives Max O'Leary a chance to block it. But yeah, he was really good. And I think if you were Val, you probably feel fairly vindicated in how you've utilised him this season, that he just seems to be kind of getting better and better after a bit of a stagnated start.
He's certainly been getting better since he started this season, Georgie. And I mean, he was chosen ahead of Martins, wasn't he? So, I mean, warranted that one, Jordan?
Yeah, no, I think he's earned it. He's done really well. He's looking to have found his feet a little bit more. I think he does look more comfortable, more effective in those central positions when he drifts inside. No, he started on the left, but he really comes alive in that central spot, I think. And I understand him kind of having that wider start and using him there, but if he can get on the ball in those kind of more central positions, I think he looks a lot more dangerous. Still a little bit hesitant with the final touch or getting a shot away. Sometimes it kind of feels a little bit rushed or just a little bit forced. But I think the build up to that chance that you mentioned there, Tom, where Espria kind of took a little bit too long and tried to drag it around the keeper, I think that was a really good example of what he can do. Good carrying, used the outside of the foot just to kind of drop the ball in there and perfect spot. And yeah, more of that. And he's going to keep himself in the team.
Bristol City were featuring Scott Twine for the first time, and he got the goal back for them. It was a bit of a mess at the back, wasn't it? With a few culprits involved in it. Ryan Porteous, the key one. What did you make of their goal, and how disappointing was it that we let them back in such fashion, Jordan?
Yeah, really poor. I think it started with that kind of Ryan Andrews just didn't win the header, did he, on the kind of the ball forward and drops down. Porteous makes a hash of it. And then uncharacteristically, Jake Livermore gets dunked on by Scott Twine there, doesn't he? And that's kind of a difficult situation. Twine's coming in with a bit of momentum and can lead towards the ball, and Livermore's just trying to shield that space and stop the header happening. But just a mess of a goal, really. The defending was...
No foul in that? It looked like he was climbing over him, no?
Well, I mean, Jake's standing his ground and kind of got a real wide base, hands out to the side, trying to protect the area, but I feel like if you're not going to attack the ball, there should be a little of leniency there in favour of the player going for it, really. Otherwise, yeah, I think it's a bit soft.
Sorry, on that, is Livermore not a little bit culpable that he seems to just be trying to stand his ground, sort of back into Twine rather than actually jump and contest the header? And he kind of makes it a little bit easy for Twine, I would say, who's not got the height advantage on him.
I think he's just slightly misread the situation a little bit and feels like that's going to be enough. I think he knows Twine is there. I don't think he anticipates Twine being able to leap and go for the ball as he did. I'm sure it was a frustrating one for himself, but he's definitely, you know, partly to blame there. He played his part in that goal. Obviously there's the somewhat comical dive from Hamer after the ball's crossed the line, but there wasn't much he could do either. It was a bad piece of defensive play. It's just one of those unfortunate situations where you kind of got three actions there, and every one of our players kind of makes a mistake or makes an error that leads to it continuing on towards the goal. So frustrating, but on a day where defensive play was mixed, I thought at times structurally we looked okay. You know, we kept our shape, and sometimes we look comfortable, especially considering how kind of cut open we were by Bristol in the last game. But some of those individual mistakes and some the use of some of our defenders in terms of the way they're deployed was also a little bit chaotic. And yeah, I think it was a disappointing one to concede.
A surprising amount has been made of the Ben Hamer dive that you referenced there, Jordan, and a lot of kind of football banter accounts sharing that video, lad Bible, that sort of crap. I don't know about you guys, and I'd be interested to hear what you think, but I just think it's a complete non-issue. He's not getting there. He's either having a laugh or just making an attempt to show, oh, look, I tried everything. But he's not bloody getting there. He's on the floor on the other side of the goal. I don't understand why it's become a thing.
It looks somewhat comical, but what I would say as well, if you're the keeper, you might be taking the chance there that that ball might be knocking onto the post and you're diving. You know, you can't really blame him for not giving
that's
up in the play.
I saw that.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that either, actually. Yeah, you're right.
Essentially, I just want to make it clear, I absolve him of any blame. I don't think he's done anything wrong, but people have made out like it was the worst attempt to make a save ever.
Well, I mean, no, I think you're right. You've had examples in the past of goalkeepers who are just sort of like taking the mick a bit. Wasn't there a Hemel Hempstead goalkeeper not too long ago who dived some way?
A shot that went about 15 yards wide and he sort of did a full dive to...
You're only really mocking it if there's a terrible effort, though, if they're missing. You're not really getting much out of them if you're mocking a goal that goes in. You know?
No, that's a good point.
A lot of the time, goalkeepers feel like they have to make an attempt. Otherwise, they will be accused of not trying their utmost to get there. I think in this case, it just felt like he was making that attempt, you know, way too late.
It looks a bit silly, but, you know, like he's putting an effort in to get to the ball. So I'd rather that than him stand there with his hands and his hips, so...
To be fair, look, he was never getting there no matter what. So, you know, it doesn't really matter what he does it? So, yeah, why not have a little dive?
Exactly.
If anything, he's put his, face in the newspapers for a day so people know about who he is, you know, more. So he's done his chance of, you know, improving his stature. No harm.
Yeah, maybe he'll get a podcast appearance somewhere after this.
Maybe.
Ben Foster will have him on.
I don't think Troy Deeney is doing anything now, so...
True that. But just to continue on from the defensive stuff, I think a lot of the conversation during the game was kind of revolving around, especially defensively, Ryan Porteous and his position, his role, his decision making. What do we make of that one?
It's another not good today for him.
It's not a good day.
It's another not good day for him, and increasingly this seems to be the case. It's possibly one where he's a little bit unlucky, and if you weren't already preconditioned by the fact that, you know, he's had a rick in him this season and they tend to come about when he dives in or is a little bit rash, then you might not be so quick to pan him, or the fan base might not be so quick to pan him. And that's one way of looking at it. But I think you've got to say it reflects badly on him and it's a trend. So what's happened in the last, where are we now? Well, year essentially, between him arriving and looking like the answer to some of our problems at centre-back to now, where you think he is one of the problems at centre-back, because I think we can't kind of sweep it under the carpet.
You say under the carpet there?
No way, did I?
It's okay. I think it's like a carpet. Okay. All right, that's good. What I will say on Porteous there, I think the real thing with him is he's got this tendency, obviously when we're out of possession, we're kind of holding our shape, or even, you know, at times we're in transition as well, he's very quick to drive out of defence and apply pressure. And I think sometimes there's an element of a hint of the fact that this is a tactical decision. We're using Porteous, he thinks a bit more mobile. Is it going to break up the opposition flow? If you apply pressure quickly, make a striker, you know, make a play on the ball, whether it's take a touch, lay off, beat him, whatever. We've seen Porteous be rolled in those situations a few times, which is a problem, give away the fouls, or just be kind of knocked out of the play. You know, the pass goes around him and we're in trouble. It does work sometimes, we've seen it. But in the situations in particular, there's one, I can't remember the exact minute to refer you to, but there was one phase of play in the first half, I believe, where we're containing, we're dropping back on the edge of our box, the ball comes into midfield, everyone's kind of within vicinity of their man, but for some reason, Porteous comes driving out to apply pressure on the ball, and then drops back in, has no impact, just loses that shape. And it just seems like such a risk. You know, I had this conversation on Twitter during the game. Like, I think it's fair to say, you know, he's I has to be in some ways being instructed to do that, or at least allowed to. The question's maybe over the decision making of when to apply that or when to do it, but it does seem a huge risk to keep going with, and one that's it's cost us a few goals this season, or at least a few big chances. What are we thinking there? Justified?
Essentially, I think you're absolutely right, Jordan, and everything needs to be some introspection, reflection, whatever it is on that front to help eradicate this. He has always shown kind of no lack of inclination to step up and dive in, you know, separate things, but kind of similar kind of tone of defending. And you do wonder at some point, like, are you reflecting on your own performances and seeing what is happening? If you're not, then why is the coach not looking at this as well? So, yeah, I don't disagree with you.
Okay. Tom, you wanted to talk about set pieces and why Bristol City were pretty good from corners. And it's actually been a theme this season, I think. We've been pretty poor at dealing with corners and pretty poor at taking them as well. What can you expand upon that, Tom?
Yeah, I don't necessarily have the answer. And it was more of a question and probably one for you, Jordan, not to give you all the heavy lifting. But obviously, it has been a problem, as we know. And Bristol City seemed to really exploit it. There were several chances that Rob Dickey had from corners, a couple of free headers. We've talked about the merits of zonal marking versus man marking versus a hybrid system. We've obviously appointed Gianni Vio as our set piece coach. I don't know if he's working kind of full time or if it's a part time role, and you can't expect him to come in after a few weeks or whatever it's been and kind of revolutionise it completely so that we score from every corner like a football manager, cheat and don't concede from any. But it still seems to be a bit of an issue. I just wonder what you thought was the root of that from a defensive point of view, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, defence, like, is in the defensive issues, the root of the defensive issues?
Sorry, as in why are we so poor defending set pieces?
It feels like a weird cultural thing with this team. We just struggle to really apply ourselves to that phase of the game. I think we do lack a little bit of the sharpness and awareness you need in the box to be proactive and defend. I think that's something we've always criticised in regards to defending zonally. You know, that's the problem. If you're not 100% committed to executing that zonal defence, then you're more likely to get exploited. So It's a little bit of a risk. I think, you know, we have a fairly consistent change in the back line, or kind of the key figures you look at defending set pieces. You know, you think about who are the main parts of defending from a set piece. Obviously, your goalkeeper, your back line, generally it all could be somewhat involved, whether that's, you know, defending on the post or whether it's kind of being a direct attack of the ball like the centre-backs. Oftentimes, your centre-forward, your striker is going to be occupying a pretty crucial position. And all of those positions change a lot. You know, the fullbacks are changing fairly frequently. The centre backs are changing, so that, I think that doesn't help, especially in a zonal system where you have a very specific role, rather than just kind of picking up the man, which is much easier to change if you're coming in and out of the team or coming off the bench and whatnot. But I think that honestly, that seems to be the main problem. It's not that we don't have players that have physically capable of winning the ball or getting to the ball in the right situation. It's just we're not doing it. So I think we need to still address that. It's not solved. Also, we've come up against a few good teams that are quite capable in those positions too, which doesn't help. But we are definitely below league average, I'd say, when it comes to dealing with those sort of issues. Mm. The offensive element of the set piece is almost kind of more what you're expecting from bringing in the coach as well. You know, you're looking for, you know, a way to increase your probability of scoring goals, your chances, and just your total goals you're accumulating over the course of the season. You know, set pieces might only count towards a few goals, but that makes a big difference. So you have to kind of consider it and take into consideration when it comes to building an attack. And I think it's something we've overlooked for quite a long time. You know, in terms of structuring that, the difficulty is always going to be you have got to rely on the delivery coming into the box. You don't have a consistent delivery taker. You know, you don't really know who's going to be taking corners, and you look at the lineup, and because the team changes a fair amount, there's not that one set piece taker that you're always going to kind of go to, which doesn't help. I was speaking to actually a set piece coach about our problems not too long ago, and I was asking, because it's, you know, it's not exactly my area of expertise in terms of from a coaching perspective, but I said, you know, what do you do if you've got a team like Watford? You don't really have an outstanding set piece taker, and your job is to increase that quality of set pieces. You'd think, you know, it's going to be much, much harder if you don't really have that guy. But you know, his opinion was that you just have to kind of coach around it. You might look to be, you know, chipping the ball in there rather than trying to get that kind of perfect cross in, that outswinger. Just less accuracy, obviously, but just chip it in there a little slower, easier to defend. But you can negate some of that with some good blocking to free up, you know, your target man or whoever to create space and win that first contact. But it's something we have to deal with unless we plan to address it in the window. So, you know, there's still a chance we bring someone in. If you're in this recruitment team, you've got to be kind of considering that as a factor when you bring the player in, especially if it's someone that's going to be starting a lot of games. So it's a tough one, but we're clearly trying to do something positive, at least offensively.
Mm. Offensively, was you surprised that Vrajovic was selected ahead of Bio, considering that Bio was back from the ban?
Yes and no. I think we've rotated them pretty regularly this season anyway. And I think with the fact that we've kind of had to go with him in the last few games, apart from obviously when Healy played, I think there's kind of something in the continuity. We've seen a few little occasions where he's perhaps been a bit more rounded than we've expected. And he is certainly more of a goal threat if we get the delivery right into him. So no, not hugely. I think the thing we've got now is hoping that they are given some assistance in the coming. What have we got? It's the 1st of February, the transfer window closes, isn't it? And it's the 22nd today. So yeah, in the next week and a bit, we need to get some assistance in there, that, and hopefully someone that does the best of what Bayer does and the best of what Rajovic does.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty poor. Not good at all, honestly. I think it's just it's the same problems, and it's, you know, again, we're at our Rajovic minute now, but it's just too loose. Just everything's too loose. The ball's kind of bouncing off him. He's not really physically imposing himself. All the same issues. I don't really want to kind of just beat it into the ground and bore everyone to death listening to it again. But yeah, it's kind of one of the negative Vrajovic performances. You know, maybe I know the argument is he looks much better coming off the bench and whatnot, but you can't really convince him to be an impact player like that for the entirety of his career here. So I think you have to find a way to improve there, improve him or improve in terms of the depth of the position, which, you know, judged on kind of the news that's coming out as we're discussing this, we're potentially looking at doing.
One person that has exited is Rhys Healy. Val gave his thoughts about Healy to the Watford Observer, and he was very open, wasn't he, Tom? Which you don't always see from a manager, so it was refreshing in some sense, but it gave us an idea as to why Rhys Healy has moved on to Huddersfield.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said at the time, you know, on one hand, we need to stop signing players that just so clearly don't fit with what the coach wants to do. And by that, I'm not saying give the coach total autonomy on recruitment, because that's not the right approach either. There needs to be a bit of a hybrid there. But, you know, clearly he is not the right type of forward. You know, it's one thing saying we'll sign exactly the player you want. It's another thing saying we'll sign a striker that fits the mould that you want. And I think that's what we need to be doing, and having that collaborative, collegiate process between everybody. And we're led to believe that will be the case with Ismail going forward, given the people that have left. So hopefully that is the case. But to give the club credit, and they have been doing this more and more over the last year, it was communicated why this has happened and what should happen from here on out, which obviously, you know, takes me back to my previous point about signing someone who does the best of what Bio and Rajovic both do, and bringing another striker in. There were a lot of people at the time who were frustrated, annoyed, worse that we hadn't got a replacement lined up and announced immediately. I don't think that's necessarily a big issue. The point I made at the time on Twitter was that Rhys Healy was our first signing. We signed him in June, and he was arguably the worst fit of any of them. So it's not about rushing it, but it clearly is about getting it right. We're obviously in a restricted window to do it, and that makes it hard. So to be honest with you, I'm actually, although I would want a striker and whatnot, I'm not going to be fuming. I'm not going to kick off if we don't do it. I think I'd rather see us take someone on loan between now and the end of the season to fill a body, because that's all Rhys Healy was, really and truly. He wasn't an option. The fact that he started against QPR and then was sold a few days later was a, you know, kind of massive misdirection. Yeah, I'd rather us not lay down money for someone and get stuck with them in the way that we have with Bio and Rajovic. Between them have cost more than 6 million, if reports are to be believed. And neither of them are quite, you know, fit for purpose that we want. It's about learning from those lessons. So, yeah, I think for the best, long answer, but best for everybody that he moved on. He wasn't getting a chance. I said I thought he'd probably leave this month. The fact that we've managed to make some money on a guy that cost us nothing on the face of it is good. And perhaps that was part of the reason why they signed him. They took a punt on him early on and thought, you know, if Ishmael likes him and he uses him, great. And if he doesn't, he'll have some resale value. But yeah, just a very sort of strange Watford career, all over very quickly. I can't remember anyone signing and leaving so quickly, which is actually a lie, because I can immediately think of Martin Devaney, who we signed and sold in same summer when he fell out with Eddie Boothroyd. But anyway, doesn't happen often.
How much do we think we've actually made from this transfer, Jordan?
From Healy? Well, I think the fee reported was a little high. I don't think it was actually 2 million. I think it was closer to 1.5, and we put down probably, well, around 300,000 to 400,000 on bringing Healy in to begin with, and, you know, all in. Not the contract itself, but with signing on bonuses, agent fees and so on. So he wasn't free. You know, when we talk about free transfers, obviously it's not completely free. You're going to increase those aspects of the deal to kind of compensate for that a little bit. So, you know, we probably brought in close to 1 million, though, which is obviously decent business. No, and it will be spread over time, obviously, but...
A lot of people feel like he didn't really get an opportunity and that he had more to give. And it's hard to argue against that, really.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, it's just a bad fit. Not that he couldn't have worked here, but, you know, it's just it's another example of kind of short-term fragmented recruitment strategy, which doesn't always pan out, often more than not, when there's not as much thought put into it necessarily as what there needs to be. Obviously, it's quite early on that he was brought in, but yeah, it's just really kind of a result of that in my mind.
Does it make you feel that the Healy start against QPR was his last chance to impress, or...?
I actually get the impression, based on what Ishmael was saying, I get the impression that he wanted to keep Healy around, actually, in some ways. I think he maybe just didn't agree on the role that he would have in the squad in terms of if that was fair or not. You know, I think Healy wanted to be starting games somewhere and feels like he could and should be. And I think Ishmael kind of had a little bit more of a lesser kind of importance on his role in the team. I don't think he necessarily saw him as that player. And we needed him at the time. You know, I think we were in a part of the season where the two strikers around him weren't really... Oh, I mean, obviously Rajovic has had mixed performances and Bio's kind of also have been the same. So it was an opportunity for Healy, and he didn't quite take it. But I just think that kind of inclusion, those starts, kind of a little bit of a kind of hint that you'll get more playing time. I just don't think it's enough. I think he needs to be out there playing, and that's ultimately what he decided upon.
Fair enough. Fingers crossed that he doesn't come back to score against us when... we play Huddersfield. Another player who has been talked about as potentially leaving, we spoke about this before, I think, with Ipswich's interest in Milos Rajovic, but Blackburn have apparently entered the fray as well. But is this just transfer speculation and chat, or is there something genuinely to this that we think?
I don't see it.
I find it weird that he's been linked with two clubs this month as well. You know, that to me, although his agent has now come out and said, oh, there's nothing in it, blah, 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 it does kind of smack a little bit of someone trying to put his name out there. I don't know what you guys think, but, you know, he wouldn't be, as I just said with Healy, wouldn't be a kind of a given candidate. It wouldn't be a given that he'd be a candidate to move this month, having only just signed. You know, he's played plenty, unlike Healy. He's scored goals for all his faults. You know, if you'd never seen him play, you would assume, oh, Watford aren't likely to let him go. And they're probably more committed to him than we are as supporters. So I do find it a little bit weird. And I was listening to a podcast the other day. I think it was Not the Top 20, and they were talking about, they touched upon it and the fact that George Hurst at Ipswich, and I know we mentioned Blackburn now, but, you know, just flipping back to that, and said that they were looking for someone to do what George Hurst did because he was very good at bringing people into play and using his body and so on. And I just thought, well, if there's genuinely any Ipswich interest, then they cannot have watched a minute of him because he just can't do those things. So, you know, does make you wonder. And that one does seem to have kind of gone dead very quickly. So my position is unchanged. If we got a good offer for him, I'd let him go on the basis that we would then be able to bring someone else more suitable in. But I just do think there's something a little bit fishy about it all.
Mm.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Well, with one gone, we certainly do need to bring somebody in. And there were reports floating around yesterday and also today, and we weren't really sure if we were going to be able to talk about it, but we have now seen a tweet from the legendary Fabrizio Romano, who has said this. He understands Watford have agreed a deal to sign Emmanuel Dennis from Istanbul Başakşehir. A surprise return agreed on loan until June, as he accepts to take a 70% pay cut to return and help Watford, a medical booked for Tuesday. So guys, your immediate response to this one?
Pretty interesting, isn't it? It's a big move. I think it's going to be met with a lot of positivity. Obviously, Dennis was extremely productive here. We even got a nice little taste of him in the Championship just before he left a couple of seasons ago as well, didn't we? So, you know, I think it's going to be an interesting one. I mean, obviously, the report there is taking a pay cut. That's earned a little bit of favour as well with Watford fans. He wants to come back. It's a good opportunity for him too, you know. If he comes here and does well, then he's putting himself back in the window to get a move back into the Premier League potentially, or just to a level he feels he should be playing at. So I'm very curious. You know, offers something completely different. Really looking at the options we have in the forward positions, he should be our best attacking player now. Really, he's going to offer you a lot. So I'm very interested. You know, obviously, a lot of the reports around the time he was here was to do with his attitude, and he wasn't very well liked in the squad, and so on. So I'm curious as to how that works with Ismail. He seems to be quite against those sort of characters. Then again, you know, it's a very different team, very different group of players, very different group of coaching staff. You know, don't forget the coaches that Dennis was working under during that real turbulent season, that relegation season that he played the majority of his football for us in. So yeah, I mean, I'm optimistic, but I think it's definitely a worthwhile risk to take, and we could have gone down a lot of worse avenues in terms of replacing Reece Healy.
He's currently on loan at Istanbul Başakşehir from Forest, right?
Correct.
So I take it he didn't play a minute for Forest this season, otherwise he wouldn't be able to play for us.
Yeah, I think they omitted him from their squad at the start of the season, didn't they? It's a surprising one, I must admit. Not for any other reason than you would have thought he would have been way out of our financial reach. You know, he wants to be here, right? Good on him. He's had a hard time since he left. I think he was probably dealt a fairly hard hand by, or fairly tricky hand by Forest, given how many players they signed, quite a few kind of forward attacking players. Two summers ago, then January again, and then last summer just gone. So, you know, it's not worked out there. And then he's not played a massive amount in Turkey either, 8 appearances by the looks of it. So perhaps he just wants to kind of rekindle a bit of love for it and, you know, form and whatnot over the next 6 months without kind of committing to anything and go from there. So yeah, I think it's an exciting one, and if we can find the right position within the team for him and get the best out of him, you know, he's got the potential to be pretty devastating in the Championship. I'd say that little glimpse we got, was it Sheffield United at home that he and Ismail Sarr and João Pedro all started in the Championship, and you know, there are moments where they were just on a different plane to Sheffield United entirely, and they just ran absolute riot. So yeah, it's a shock and potentially a real shot in the arm.
I do think if he plays to that level, to the level that he knows he's capable of, I think he's a player that Ismail really, really like. He can do everything. You know, he can work really, really well off the ball. His pressing is really good. His energy is great. He's tireless. He plays with such a tempo and such an energy when he's playing well. It's such an asset for the team. You know, if we can get close to that Dennis, that version of Emmanuel Dennis, then, you know, we'll be in really good stead. And he's going to have some ups and downs, I'm sure. You know, it's not going to be easy for him, I would say. He's not played a tremendous amount of football, as you kind of mentioned there as well, Tom. But, you know, I'm interested to see how Ismail deals with a player like Dennis. I know we've had the loser situation and so on, but, you know, a player that's coming in theoretically wants to be playing football here. I'm curious as to the kind of how he motivates him and kind of how he handles him, and also what role exactly he'll play. You know, he can play wide, he can play centrally. I think you'd expect him to play centrally, but the fact that he gives you some versatility, you know, we talk about the wingers that Ismail's been using, the way we've been trying to, you know, build that attack from the wing. Having this type of forward that can fluctuate between, you know, it allows you to get that winger a little bit more central, pick up that space, you can have some more rotation. I think it gives us a lot of variety in attack, and it could be quite interesting to see how it pans out. So yeah, I think people can be positive about it. I'd say kind of temper expectations a little bit. I think I've seen a few already going super overboard about this deal, but it's definitely a positive one. It's one that we probably didn't expect just a couple of weeks ago.
Not currently featuring for Nigeria at the minute. So is available to play from the off, I imagine.
Exactly, yeah. Medical's booked for this week, apparently. So
how is he likely to fit in with the way that we've been playing?
Well, I think the striker position is going to be the one that he's going to be looking to fill. But, you know, as I said, the variety and attack that it gives us, the way we can move around in game is important. You know, you look at some of the players we've got on the wings there. Now, Asprey likes to drift inside centrally. He works really well as, you know, a player that can have some intelligence in his movement and not just kind of be too stagnant. I think that's something we see with Rajovic too. You know, he occupies that central position. He's often trying to kind of find that far post, and Asprey will look for him. But Asprey really comes alive, and you've got a mobile forward that's running in behind, kind of making those angles and allowing him to find that pass. And I think that's a really good asset to have there, you know, as well as the kind of more direct options you have on the left for someone like Ken Sema. You know, if Ken Sema has to get central and get into the box, he can be affected there too. But he works really well with interplayers, you know, in a different sort of way. You know, it might be more simple with a 1-2 and driving into space, but I think they thrive off someone that offers a variety of movement. He can take the ball in different areas. He's actually pretty competent in the air too. There's nothing to stop you putting a cross in with Dennis. We've seen what he can do there. You know, I think away at Norwich in the Premier League, kind of a good example of that. He's not afraid to get involved in that capacity, and just a real kind of complete picture of a forward on his day. So I think you can really do what you want with him, and that's partly what I'm interested to see what Ismail does, because he's got a few options now.
Tom, when he was here last, there were reports around his character. Reports that I think were unfounded, but the reports were there nonetheless. And some people will say there's no smoke without fire. What's your opinion on that? And do you think that that potentially could harm or not the side, especially given the fact that we've recently got rid of somebody who was reportedly, and again, this is all just, you know, conjecture, harming the side with his attitude in Imran Musa. So what's your thoughts there?
I think you've stressed the key point there, which is this is all kind of reportedly and what have you, you know, rumours and tittle-tattle and, you know, none of us actually know. And I think, as Jordan said, you know, Ismail would have to probably believe, be convinced that he was the right sort of character to have around the place. The stuff beforehand, I think, kind of emanated as much as anything from two things. One, his time in the Nigeria setup when he was a bit younger and there was seemingly something of a fallout where he was kind of, you know, told he wouldn't be called up again anytime soon. And then I think, was it when he was in Belgium when he was a little bit younger? There was some kind of suggestion there. But again, you know, these all come through kind of reports that have been translated and rehashed and whatnot by news aggregators. You know, that's if there's any truth in them in the first place. But I think it's one of those things that was kind of repeated over and over, repeated and kind of manifested into reality that he had a bad attitude. But I think to have scored the goals he did and got the assists he did, because he got a lot of assists, which probably gets forgotten, and put in the performance he did in such a dysfunctional, chaotic, poor team managed by three managers, was it, that went down? You know, to kind of ride all of that and play the way he did, albeit there was a bit of a dip, suggests to me that there's just nothing in it. He's clearly a pretty, you know, committed, hungry individual. So I think it can only be a good thing.
Also, if he is a kind of difficult character to work with, you know, that's let's see what the manager can do with him. Let's see how he manages it. I'm curious. And you know, ultimately, as you said there, Tom, he had a difficult season. I'm sure there's a lot of bad attitudes in the squad that season. In fact, we probably know there was. You know, playing under the coaching regimes they had to play under was probably, you know, a very difficult environment for lots of players. But the one thing that remained consistent, he was productive, and you can't really complain too much if that's still the case. And you know, obviously, you got to factor in what other impacts that kind of a negative attitude has on other areas. But if he's here scoring goals, that's ultimately what's going to be most important for us. You know, if he's elevating the performance of the team, then you know, we have to try and find a way to cope with it. But you know, don't forget too, you know, I think he always put a good amount of effort in on the pitch, you know, whether it comes to scoring goals, assisting, as you say, but also just work rate in general. And he also did still play in that championship season, the first game, even though just one game, I think, but he didn't have to, and he did play that night to help the team. And I think you have to kind of look at those as well when it comes to trying to assess and judge a character of a guy that we almost predominantly know. We're just going off rumours and reports, and what he does on the pitch is kind of our best way of judging the impact he has.
He looked good as well in that championship game.
He did.
I think we're all quite disappointed to lose him. Jordan, I don't expect you to know the ins and outs of how Nottingham Forest played last season, but it didn't work out for him there, and he got a good amount of game time. What do you think was the reasons why he didn't work there, and would any of that translate to here, or would it be a completely different story?
It was a very different set. He didn't have the freedom. He didn't have the freedom of position you expect him to have, or he'd want to have, to really flourish. I think it was quite a structured system at first, and he just didn't really fit particularly. You know, obviously Giraldi who was there when he signed, wasn't it, at Forest? And
yeah, it was.
Yeah, I think Felipe Giraldi was the technical director, the head of recruitment at the time, and it didn't work out well. Obviously, you know, the influx of players. Like, there was quite a period of time where clearly it was a question as to what was the starting 11. How do you get these players in? How do you kind of mix and match? And you know, Dennis just didn't look like the Dennis we saw the year before at Vicarage Road, and they just didn't really get the time to kind of work his way back into the team. And you know, maybe that's where we start to see some negative aspects of his personality. I'm not too sure, but ultimately, I think it's an extremely difficult situation for any of those players to really thrive, and there's a lot of working out to be done, and he just kind of came off on the raw end of it, I'd say. That from the outside, that seemed to be my perception. Did you get anything more than that, Tom?
Yeah, I think that's fair. They obviously sign a lot of players, Forest, and do every single transfer window. The reporting at the time on The Athletic, who are one of the few clubs who have still got a dedicated reporter, is that he was kind of given chances periodically and just didn't take the most of them in those moments. And that kind of led to a loss of faith, I suppose, from Steve Cooper in him. And that was that. It's a little bit of a worry, I guess, that he's not played a lot of football recently, consistently, and, you know, not from a fitness point of view, I even mean. I just mean from a kind of sharpness, confidence point of view. But I think that is maybe going to be negated to some extent by coming back to Watford. You know, he's going to get a hero's welcome when he comes back. You know, any kind of misgivings anyone has about him will be forgiven, I would have thought, like that. And there'll be, as you say, a lot of expectation on him. So, yeah, it's weirdly exciting as far as Watford transfers goes. I said as far as there, didn't I? Apparently I can't speak tonight. Apparently can't use my tongue correctly.
Okay, then, so it seems like we're pretty positive about this. I must stress that it hasn't been made official, and the great man has got things wrong in the past. I mean, at one stage, João Pedro was going to Newcastle and that didn't happen. So, you know, he has got things wrong in the past, but it feels like this one might be genuine. So be pretty excited, yeah. Obviously, it's not quite the end of the transfer window yet, but we are building up to it. Is there any other business that we would like to see, or that we, I suppose the real question is that we realistically think might happen? A lot of people have been pointing fingers in the direction of right back, but I think Val mentioned in a recent chat with the Watford Observer that he was pretty happy with right back, which upset a few people, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, it caught me by surprise. He was kind of glowing, and I suppose you've got to be, about Tom Delibashiro at right back, but I don't think anyone can look at the way he's done there, and this is no slight against him, and say that he's any kind of solution there. We do need someone else if Ngakia is going to be out much longer, because you can guarantee one thing about Jeremy Ngakia, and that is that he will get injured. So we will end up back here again. It's that simple. Delibashiro should be in midfield.
Yeah. Jordan, is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's pretty fair.
So are we surprised that then there's not going to be any movement at right back, at least in January?
I mean, you've got to pick your poison in some ways, right? I guess they've got a certain budget they can use, and I think they're going to be looking at maybe a midfield spot too, Imran Lusa being off and so on. And there's rumours of other players potentially being out the door. Tom Ince was talked about, wasn't he? Potentially.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Window. So I think you kind of got to be a little bit flexible with how you operate and who you bring in. You know, you might have three spots, you can bring in one or two players. So look at what you've got in the squad and assess kind of what the pros and cons are in kind of each position individually. You know, look at someone like Dennis, that might give you two options there. You give yourself a bit of cover at striker and also give yourself some cover on the wing if needed too. So maybe that gives you flexibility to address the midfield or potentially even the fullback. You know, he might have said that he's happy with it, but I'm sure, you know, these things can change very quickly, and I wouldn't rule us out of looking at that if an opportunity arose that we thought was worthwhile.
If Tom Ince does end up finding another club this January, is it going to be a surprise, or do you think that it's just not really been his time here?
Worth a risk. I think he could have had a bigger part to play at times, but, you know, we've got something out of him, and if we move on, then we move on. I don't think too many people will be too disappointed.
No, Tom, you feel the same?
Yeah, another one that's a bit of a calculated gamble, I think, right? If he works out, brilliant, he only costs 50k. And if he doesn't, well, never mind, he only costs 50k. But he's not playing, and you would think that with Dennis coming in, that's another competitor on the kind of wide, in the wide areas, you know, not necessarily a left-sider, but certainly another wide player. I reckon that's probably got some legs in it.
So central midfield, that we think is the area that they're going to look to add if there's going to be anything else. Maybe left-sided centre-back as well? Or
left-sided centre-half.
That, yeah.
I think we can get by in midfield. Midfield would be a nice to have rather than priority.
Okay. Well, let's hear your arguments for each one then. Why left-sided centre-back, Tom?
Just because I think we've only got four centre-halves. Three of them are right-sided. One of them is, as we discussed at the top, having some difficulties in Porteous. One of them's Pollock, who's never convinced. And the other one is Sierra Alta, who always gets injured and seems to be behind Pollock. Behind Porteous anyway. So, yeah, I'd say for the balance, you want right-sided on the right and left-sided on, or left-footed on the left. So it just seems like a fairly natural one for me.
And Jordan, why should it be the midfielder?
Well, not necessarily instead of a back of a centre back. I think it's just, you know, these are just what's likely. The midfielder, we just might need options. You know, I think Tunde Bashiru coming in there has helped a lot. Obviously, if you have to play a right back more often, then that's going to limit his minutes in midfield. Shakhtar Tadze can fit in there. We've got options, but you know, I think these are issues or areas you can address. But we technically have enough cover in all positions that we could feasibly think we can get through. You might disagree with it. I do as well, but they can convince themselves they can. I think it'll be very opportunistic depending on what deals arise and, you know, what they can do in a favourable manner. In a, you know, a deal like Dennis, it might not necessarily be you're going out there and identifying these players to bring in long term. It's more of a kind of summer issue. So just kind of see what's going on in the market, keep a temperature on it, and if something arises, they'll go for it. But I'm not convinced there's any one position they'll be targeting very aggressively.
Mm. Not one to address this January, but left-back seems to have been a position that people have been concerned about. James Morris has the problems that he has, is just not being up to the level. But Jamal Lewis, who people expected to be up to the level, hasn't consistently shown that.
I think he's out in front by some distance as number one left back, and I think he's been good in the main after a little bit of an up and down start. I just think with those two and Ken Semmer thrown into the mix that it's not something we can afford to be picky over.
Okay, fair enough. So you don't think it'll be something they'll look at in the summer?
Summer maybe, depending on what happens with Lewis, who probably earns too much for us. But yeah, it'll be summer at the earliest.
Okay, fair enough. All right, FA Cup up next. Saints at home, probably quite a difficult opposition, but a mixture of first teamers in there, do you think?
Yeah. I think we're going to take it relatively seriously. Southampton probably will as well, bar a couple of changes. It's not the most inspiring game, but you know, it's another one, another feature to watch, another one to discuss, and potential for a bit of getting some minutes into the legs of some hopeful new arrivals.
Yeah, excellent. All right then, great stuff. That'll do us then. Really exciting news there at the end about Dennis. Hope that one comes off. It's been lovely to have you all back together, the trio doing its stuff. If you've enjoyed the episode, please do go to give us a review on Apple Podcasts. Just go down to the bottom there, give us a rating out of 5. Would really appreciate it. It really helps the stats for people to find us. The algorithm loves getting reviews, and so do we. And if we do get one, we'll absolutely read it out on the podcast, hopefully it's a good one. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do so. Or sorry, X now. It's on X. You can do so at Watford Pod is what we are for the Watford Buzz. You can also see us individually at Messi Messiano, at TB Bedell, and at Jordan Weimer. And I think that's everything. Anything for you guys?
No, looking forward to catching up in a few days now.
See you later, guys. And we'll see you after the FA Cup one. Bye-bye.
Catch you in a bit.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.